Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Wow, a lot of fans in the audience.
Yeah. Hello, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah, today we'll talk about Hawk Trace compliance and how we approached it. And to start, let's understand first why Hawk Trace compliance is important. The Hawk Trace rule is the part of Ethereum protocols that decides on the head of the canonical chain. That is the chain that you use to confirm your transactions. That is the chain that will be eventually finalized by the protocol. And a non-compliant with the Hawk Trace spec implementation can cause different security issues, such as confirming your transaction with the chain that your local node pretends to say that this chain is canonical, but the chain is effectively not canonical, and it's not canonical to the observation of the majority nodes in the network. In some situations, this non-compliant implementation can cause network splits, which can affect validator voting rate in a bad way, and in the worst case scenario, it could delay finality. In ideal world, every implementation is formally verified to be compliant with the Hawk Trace spec, but we cannot expect this to happen because it is quite challenging and costly. And our approach to the compliance is to extensively test every implementation against the Hawk Trace spec. So now a bit about the Hawk Trace rule itself. So imagine there is a node state that is computed from the messages that are coming from the network, such as blocks, votes, and others. And the Hawk Trace rule algorithm is executed over this state in the following three steps. So at the first step, there is a filtering function that selects blocks that are candidate for head. We call them viable for head blocks. At the second step, validator votes are used to compute weights of subtrees, which contains those viable blocks. And at the last step, the algorithm recursively goes down to the heaviest subtree until the leaf block is found. And that leaf block will be the head. So the algorithm doesn't look complex. It's relatively simple. But the complexities here coming from the different place. There are many nodes interacting in the network, and they produce many messages, blocks, and votes that results in a huge variety of states over which the Hawk Trace algorithm is evaluated. And every client implementation uses their own optimization in order to compute the state fast and in order to run the Hawk Trace rule. So those two things make the Hawk Trace compliance incredibly complicated. And now over to Alex on how do we fight those complexities.
So our goal is to reveal differences between Hawk Trace specification and implementations. And we need a lot of interesting test scenarios. But generating lots of really interesting scenarios is a challenging problem. And so to overcome that, we developed a strategy which is based on the following principle: differential testing, property-based testing, model-based testing, and final ingredient, fuzzing and randomization. Okay, about differential property testing. Hawk Trace spec is executable, so we can compare implementation behavior against specification directly. And this is why differential testing. And we want to check that every implementation calculates the head of canonical chain correctly, but it does not mean that, so if the check the head is correct, it does not mean that protocol state is correct too. And so we can check additional properties to reveal more bugs with using essentially the same test suite.
And here is the example of how the property checks can be really helpful. On the left side, there is a buggy implementation that, for some reason, just missed one vote. The head in both cases, in case of implementation and specification, is the block C. So this vote miss did not affect the head computation. And if the test case would just compare the head and the client, this bug implementation running this test case would pass it successfully. And directly comparing the weight of block C in this case would help us to reveal bug much easier, because otherwise we would need to create a test that in which this buggy implementation would lead us to the different block to be the head, like for instance block B. So it's just like less tests can reveal more bugs. That's the short description. So yeah, what we haven't yet mentioned is that our compliance tool leverages on the already existing Fork Choice testing framework. There is the consensus, in the consensus specs, there is the Fork Choice testing format. There are manually written Fork Choice tests, and clients already run them. Those are integrated, the clients already check some of the properties. So the differential property-based testing is already in place, and what we do with our compliance tool is just add one more property, which is to check weights of viable for head blocks.
Okay, so we want to check that fork choice rule is executed correctly, but just covering various execution paths is not enough, because this rule executed on many nodes and they're interacting and building blocks using the rule. And so what we want is to capture these interactions, but we do not enumerate all possible scenarios. And so we use model-based approach. Our models basically allows us to focus on the aspects that are interesting, abstract away from other stuff. And we have three models here: FFG checkpoint, tree shapes, block tree shapes, and also filter block tree predicates coverage model. And each models, for example, we have 10 blocks, and we have various trees constructed of these 10 blocks. And so we basically want to generate a test vector for each of this tree shape. And if we are able to do that, then we have 100% coverage of our model. And for our three models, we currently obtained 1,000 of solutions, but in practice it can be arbitrarily larger. So it can be 1,000,000 models, no problem.
Yeah, so to give you like more intuition behind how this model-based generation works, let's consider the FFG checkpoints model. This model is parameterized by two main parameters, which are number of epochs and the number of supermajority links. And here is the example of a couple of solutions that satisfy this model with four epochs and two supermajority links. And if you look at the top, the epoch number four, in this case, will be finalized according to FFG checkpoints finality gadget rules. And in the second case, which is on the bottom, the epoch number two will be finalized. So basically, when we do the test generation, we ask the constraint solver to find all possible combinations of justified and finalized checkpoints given the some certain model inputs, and we also run these models with different inputs. Like you can run it like with 10 epochs and 5 supermajority links, with 10 epochs and 4 supermajority links, and so on. And this gives us a lot of solutions to further work with in our generation.
Okay, so now we have many model solutions, and everyone can be turned into a test vector, but that can be done in different ways. For example, validators can vote for different blocks, but as a result, we can have the same shape. And so we use a randomization to instantiate these model solutions, basically flipping a coin. And after we have a test suite of test vectors, we can additionally do fuzzing. It's important because our models actually assume that all events arrive in time, which is unrealistically. But we can easily overcome it by shuffling, duplication of messages, and dropping some messages, and also by mutating messages. We will also plan to implement in future coverage-guided fuzzing of implementations. And this randomized instantiation and fuzzing allows us to increase the number of tests in by orders of magnitude.
Yeah, here is the example of how the randomization is used. As Alex mentioned, we have these model solutions, and we use them to produce like various test vectors. And on the top, there is just a model which says that basically there is a block that has two children. The client has nothing to do with this model. It cannot run this model because to make it a real test vector, we have to make it a real blockchain that follows the Ethereum protocol rules. And we use consensus specs for doing this, for making these blocks turn into making this block dependency to turn it into real blocks and real votes. And in this case, the model does not answer you to many, many questions that the protocol need to, you know, to create an instance of a blockchain. Those questions such as like which validators are voting for which block every single slot? Where is the maybe there is an empty slot between those blocks? Which is the total number of validators participating at a moment in time? Whether the message is like some message is invalid or not, and so forth. And for every case, for every possible case here, to answer such questions, to decide on such things, we flip a coin. So we have like every test generator run, there is a combination of model solutions that we use and a randomness seed. And running the same combination of model solutions with different randomness seed can yield a different test vector. What matters here is that this test vector will be completely different from the fork choice point of view. So like in this example, there are the heads are different, so but the model is the same.
So we have implemented the initial phase of the strategy, and this work was supported by a grant from Ethereum Foundation and from ConsenSys. And so we have a test generator, we have a PR in ConsenSys Specs repository. We have generated three test suites, two tiny and small the test suites for initial adoption, and we have also the main standard test suite which contains about 13,000 of tests, which I believe is enough for initial phase.
Yeah, and so we did the, as a prototype, we did the integration of this tool in Taku. As I mentioned before, there is already the fork choice test and clients already know how to run them. So this integration was relatively straightforward. We added the new property check that mentioned before. Found some issues. A couple of them are related to optimizations. I'll cover this on the next slide. And we found a four edge cases where Taku is not kind of like compliant to the spec. But these edge cases are very, very unlikely to happen on any test net, including the main net. And the fact that we found those edge cases shows us how powerful this tool is with only 13,000 tests. Just imagine what would it be like if we have like 100,000 tests or 1,000,000 tests. And we're looking forward to have this tool suite integrated with other consensus layer clients to find issues in them as well.
So let's look at test suite details. So we have test groups inside test suites. For example, block 3 focuses on trees of various shapes, and block weight, we try to produce block trees where weights are distant from each other. We also have a shuffling group, and this group which focus on attest translation, invalid messages, and combinations of filterable tree predicates. And overall, we have about 13,000 of tests right now. Okay, so we have problems, and one problems is that advanced mutations are challenging to implement. For example, if you change a block, we need to recalculate its hash, and descendants blocks and attestations should be recalculated too. And this takes time, so test generation is slow currently. It takes about 10 seconds per second. We have investigated the reasons for that, and okay, one reason is that fork choice rule is expressed using Python, which is an interpreted language, and it's slow. But that's not the only source of the problem, because there are also some slow spec components. They are optimized, actually, but there are still room for improvement. And this slow test generation limits the practical size which we can achieve.
Yeah, as I mentioned before, there are some optimizations that cause some tests fail. And those optimizations are that we have faced with are related to DOS protection. So some attestations, some old attestations that are not going to affect the fork choice decision are discarded in Teco, for instance, and in other clients as well. And different clients use different heuristics to discard such attestations. And here we have another problem, is that the suite cannot be designed to avoid all those failures. And because of different clients has different optimizations and different heuristics, there will be different subset of tests that are failing. And we have like just 13,000 tests, but imagine if you have a million tests and you have like, I don't know, thousands of tests failing, and you have to ensure that you have to understand whether those are because of such optimizations and this is a legit case or whether this is a real bug. So this is something to work with client developers on. And as a next slow step, we want to integrate this test suite into other consensus tech clients. Here we engage other client developers to help us with. And yeah.
Yeah, okay, so one of the most important things to do is to speed up test generation. And okay, one thing that we want to do is to transpile specification to C or to NIM, Rust, other compile to language. And of course, there is a problem that transpiled code, there can be a bug into the translation. But since we are translating function to function, it's actually much easier to test each function individually. And another approach, another important thing is that to optimize slow components. We have already experimented with faster implementation. So as a result, we expect that our tests should run, tests should be generated at least 10 times faster. And also an important thing is to implement coverage-guided fast testing of client implementation. And for this reason, it's critical to have fast test generation.
So if you want to talk about this topic, reach us out. You can also find us on ETH R&D Discord. Here is the QR code, which links you to a page with the references to the work we did. There is a description of the test and methodology. There is a link to the PR, to the spec, which introduces the test generator for this suite. And also there is the PR PR to Teco that integrates this suite into Teco. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Alex and Mikhail. All right. Great to see you. Got a lot of support from the audience. That's fantastic. Now, I wish I could say I understood the topic or the content, but I didn't. But I'm sure the audience did, because they're asking lots of questions. I'm very honest about it, you know. Please upvote your questions, which are most popular, and we're going to look at the screen and take a run through the questions. Right at the top, Do you run fork choice tests covering non-finalization with multiple forks? Who'd like to take this question?
I love this question because I, before this talk, an hour before this talk, I was thinking about having this test ensued because if you if you've been at the Deb Lyons presentation, who was presenting on the non-finality and how can it kill Ethereum, this is very important for clients to have this kind of test ensued. We haven't thought about this much, but I think it is doable. And yeah, I'm very happy to discuss this and try to make something and try to make a suite that would test non-finality and let clients do their optimizations and check them by just running this on the computer.
Excellent. From one question can change everything, right? Now, the question at the top, this test generator rocks. So another round of applause for creating such a wonderful test generator. Again, if you want to give feedback before you go into the Q&A, there's a little box for speaker feedback. Please go and write it there so the speakers can take a look at that. But well done to both of you. Let's go to the next few questions. Do you plan to set up a dashboard to show test results from different CL clients like Hive? Who'd like to take this?
I'll take this. We don't have such dashboard for other CL tests. We have plenty of CL tests that are run by clients. And yeah, I haven't thought about it. We haven't thought about it, so probably not. Because yeah, if it will be useful, we can, but maybe not.
Okay. All right. Let's go straight to the next one. What does it mean for the fork choice spec to be executable? Go ahead.
Yeah. I'll take one.
Thank you.
Okay. So it's expressed as a Python code. So it's basically a number of functions, and some functions prescribe how to react to events or messages arriving from network. It's on block, on attestation, on a test succession, and some others. There's also time tick. And finally, you have a method to get head. So this is just plain Python code. You can run it.
All right, let's go right to the next one. We got three questions left. I think we got enough time. The randomizing weights model can take an arbitrary tree as model? How about FFG information? Who'd like to answer this one?
I can.
Okay.
So the tree, block tree model is just one of the models. And there was just an example, so with randomization. And we also have the FFG checkpoints model that gives the all possible combinations of justified and finalized checkpoints given the model input. So it was in the presentation as well. So we have a model for that. It is also this information also used by the test generator.
All right, thank you for answering that. I'm going to mark it as answered. Last two, are attestations only on-chain coming from blocks?
No. We have both cases.
So all right.
We have get attestations from blocks, also produce them separately.
Very good.
I can expand on this. We have actually have three possible cases for this. One is that just in pure on-chain attestation. The other one is pure network attestation, that the attestation that is not included in any block, and the third case is both. It is in the block, it is on chain, and it is coming from the network as well. And this is all decided by the randomization. So we flip a coin and decide which attestation will be in which state.
All right, thank you for answering that. You're looking at me like I understand the answer. I don't. But the audience, I can tell from the audience is nodding and I'm just nodding along with them. Okay, we got one voted. Okay, we got 51 seconds. Let's do it. If the model is written to test the spec implementation, how do you guarantee the model correctness?
Okay, the model does not have to be correct because we execute Python specs directly. Mm-hmm. So we use it just to produce interesting test vectors. And yeah, we are using spec code to produce these text vectors. But finally, we have a special procedure to run the generated test using the Python spec and check that everything is okay.
Very good. And I believe I can help you answer. Do you execute the Python spec directly? Yes, you do. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give our two speakers a wonderful round of applause to Alex and Mikhail.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.